Good morning. Welcome to the Bell and Paul Cleveland Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in studio today. Gary Bell's out of town. We're here to talk to you about your legal problems. We're the only show of its kind. We're in our regular day lives. We're personal injury lawyers. We represent those who have been injured as a result of the negligence of another. If you've been hurt in a car accident or as a result of somebody else's negligence, contact us. We'll help you. We'll help you get a legal game plan together. That's what we're known for, is putting together a legal game plan. Gary and I have been doing this this show for the last 15 years. Every single Saturday morning to talk to you about what your legal questions might be about any legal topic, any legal matter. We're not a political show. We don't talk politics, but we certainly do talk about how we can help you with your injuries and how we can help you with your life. And this can be a traffic question. It can be a family law question. It can be any kind of question. If we don't know the answer, we'll call you during the week with an answer, because we'll look it up, we'll research it, we'll find people who can help us answer the question. It's a broad area and broad, and the law is very broad, so we need to be able to help you. We're Bell and Pollock. You can reach us during the week at bellpollock.com, championsofthepeople.com, or 303-795-5900. It's Memorial Day weekend, folks. Let's all be safe, be careful. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Let's use the weekend for what it's meant to be. It's for us to remember those who've been in service for us, and who died for us, who gave their lives for us, who gave their time for us, who helped us to be what we are now. And let's remember Memorial Day weekend, but also let's celebrate it appropriately. We're going to try and stay with the phones right now, and we're going to go to Carl in Loveland, who has a question about a pre-existing injury. Carl, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I had an accident last summer in last August. I stepped into a sprinkler on my apartment complex that wasn't covered. It was covered over by grass, and I didn't see it. And it was a commercial sprinkler that was real deep in the ground, and it didn't have a sprinkler, it was just a hole in the ground. And after I went to the emergency room and went to see my doctor and the MRIs and everything, come to find out I had a torn meniscus, had to have surgery, 4 months of grueling physical therapy, the whole nine. The medical bills came to $26,000. So when I hired an attorney, a young lady, and the insurance company that represents the apartment complex discovered I had a pre-existing condition way back in 2010, where the MRI showed that I just had a slight tear. No surgery was required or anything like that. My doctor at the time thought it was no big deal. I didn't even know anything about it. But anyway, now they're trying to say that they're trying to dig into my military records at the VA, and should I let them do that to see if they can find something else? There's been no other treatment or surgeries on the knee prior to last year.
Well, let's talk a little bit about when you said prior to last year. So you had this minor tear, and what you're telling me is that you had never sought any medical treatment prior to stepping into the sprinkler hole.
No. When I was going to the doctor up at the VA about the knee, he did an MRI. And he says, I guess sometime along the line he must have told me that, yeah, you've got a slight tear in your meniscus, but it didn't require, wasn't serious enough to require surgery.
Had it caused pain or injury or any kind of inability for you to do things at all?
Well, I was having a little pain in the knee, yeah. But nothing, you know, like then last summer, I stepped in this hole on my apartment complex, and now the MRI says extensive tearing. You know, there's a big difference in the wording of the MRI report.
Sure, Carl. You're wavering between what we call pre-existing injury versus a thin shell doctrine, okay? And the question is going to be, or the thin skull doctrine, and the question is going to be whether or not this is truly pre-existing injury. And seeing as you didn't get medical care for it for, let's say, 6 months to a year prior to this event, then it may not be pre-existing injury at all. It may be what we call the thin skull or the thin shell doctrine, which means you were more susceptible to being injured as a result of the event because you had a condition that could have been injured. All right. And that the situation on that is, in law, we have a saying that a tortfeasor or a negligent party takes their victim as they find them. And that means they have to take you as they find you, not wishing that you were somebody who never had any kind of knee problem, not wishing you were somebody who didn't have this situation with your knee. So your lawyer is going to want to vacillate between the two of them to figure out what's going to be best for you, because there could be an argument as to pre-existing injury. And I can tell Bob wants to jump in here. So, Bob, go ahead.
You know, Brad, they want you to think, the insurance company wants to think you're this truckload of steel ball bearings. In reality, you may have some eggs in there. And if the eggs crack, you don't have to be that 100% person. In fact, if you went to trial, you'd get a jury instruction talking about an exacerbation of a pre-existing condition.
Now, what we get to is, then they say, now we want to see your medical records as it relates to this knee injury and I or this knee condition, and I would give them to them. I wouldn't give medical records on anything else, but your lawyer should get these medical records in advance, and I don't know how far back they want to go, but I would give them medical records probably at least going back 5 years, maybe even 10, as to your knee only. And as to what was going on with that tear, if you've got an MRI years ago that said, hey, there was a little bit of a tear there, but it wasn't causing you problems, it wasn't really anything difficult. Yeah, you had a soreness every now and then. It wasn't necessitating surgery. It wasn't necessitating any kind of extended medical care. Then I would get just those records that go to the knee. Nothing else. You don't have to tell them about your arms, your legs, your heart, your chest, or anything else. And I would give those to him, because I'd be ready to argue in front of the jury that, look, a lot of people would have been able to step in that hole and maybe not got hurt. But Carl stepped in this hole and got hurt because he was in this condition. And then I'd be telling the judge, and the judge would give you an instruction that says you cannot reduce Carl's recovery because of the condition he was in when he stepped in that hole. You have to take him as he was, and you have to accept him with this different type of with the fact that he was more susceptible to the injury. Now, if it's pre-existing injury, I think it's, once again, nothing more than a bump in the road, because I think you can easily look and say, look, this may be a pre-existing injury if the judge wants to call it that, but it was nothing. It wasn't causing any problems, so it was a non-existent pre-existing injury.
Well, you know, Brad, we all walk around like problems with their back, but we're asymptomatic. We don't have any conditions or any medical conditions we need to talk about until an accident occurs. We're more susceptible because, you know, if your back and my back, if we looked at an x-ray, we'd probably scream because, you know, we have issues, but we don't have any. The symptoms are asymptomatic until we get into an injury accident of some sort. And like you said, they have to take us as they find us. We don't have to be that 100% person. We could be that 80% person, now we're at 60%. They still need to take care of us and treat us properly.
You getting our idea, Carl?
Yeah, they gave me a real low ball offer. It was insulting a couple of months ago. And now this is going into the 10th month, and it still hasn't been settled. Nobody has talked any numbers other than the insurance company, and they gave me an embarrassing offer.
Wouldn't even
half my medical bill.
Hey, Carl, we got a good break. Can you hold over the break?
Sure.
Hold for us. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Carl's going to hold. We're going to talk to him. Then we're going to talk to Don and Melvin. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We'll be right back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in the studio today. We're going to stay right with phones. Give us a call. You can call us at 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat, 970-457-1009. Carl, You were asking some questions about how long it's taking. You said the incident occurred about 10 months ago, correct?
Correct.
All right. Now, normally, it doesn't have to be, but a lot of lawyers will wait until you're through treating or until you're close to through treating, or you're at least at a point where the doctors can determine if you've reached what they call maximum medical improvement, if you're the best you're going to be, so that the lawyers can understand what future problems you're going to have and can build that into your recovery. So, you know, the lawyer you hired, I don't know if she's experienced or not. Please let her know if she needs, just wants to brainstorm it or talk about it. She's free. She can call me at any time. I'm happy to talk to her. She can, but if she's got experience, then she may very well have waited to see what your condition was. Now, probably behind the scenes, she was gathering evidence, getting pictures, seeing what the condition of the property was, making sure she could preserve her evidence. But then she's got to know, like, if the doctor says you're going to need a second surgery, or if you've recovered well, or if you're going to have this problem for the rest of your life, and what kind of problems you're going to have.
Well, you know, all that's been taken. You know, I no longer have any more physical therapy, no more doctor appointments. That's all been done a couple of months ago. Everybody's got all the evidence they need, and now they're just sitting around on their hands.
All right.
And
so
I'm in the middle.
All right. So she made a demand, sounds like, or at least they've made an offer. The offer's way too low. It probably is insulting. That's what insurance companies do. They give you an insulting offer to begin with. Now your job is, or your attorney's job is to come back with the offer that which is acceptable to you, probably with a little bit of padding in it, so there's some room for negotiation. Usually, if the insurance company doesn't want to give me any kind of counter that's in a decent amount, that's something we can deal with, it's time to start a lawsuit. And then
that's what I said. I sent her an email and said, I want to get a decent offer by the end of May, the end of this month. Otherwise, I want to start the litigation process. Because I've been cooperating with this insurance company. They've been dictating to me and my attorney. Now it's time for me to dictate to them.
Right. And it's if it's time to start the lawsuit, it's a very simple process. You file a complaint. You serve it on the management company or the owner of the property, depending on who's involved in it. The complaint would probably be against the management company and those people who were required to maintain the property, and anybody who might have been responsible for the sprinkling system. And you get it down the road, and it's a very simple process, and it could be done if it's the end of May was your trigger date. If there's nothing by the end of May, she can probably have everything done, completed within that first week to 10 days pretty easy. Wouldn't you say, Bob?
It shouldn't take long at all. It falls under what's called the Colorado Premises Liability Act. So the landowner, you have to prove a couple things. One, your status is on the property, probably an invitee, so they have to protect you from those things they knew or should have known about. It's not just the property owner. The property owner can be the sprinkler company if they control the area. Could be the landlord owns the property, but it shouldn't take very long. It's a simple process to get a complaint drafted and filed in the court.
In our Colorado Supreme Court says once a case is filed, it's got to be completed within 1 year. So, you know, you're still looking at a year out, but that year doesn't start running until you file the complaint.
Just remember the statute.
Can I suggest that myself to my attorney, or how should I do this?
Oh, yeah. Tell your attorney you want to start the lawsuit. Just tell your attorney, let's get it going. And yeah, just tell her you want to get it going, and if she has any questions, she can give us a call, or you can give us a call. Call us off the air. You want to, you know, feel free to call me anytime to discuss it, and you know, we can do the same thing with the attorney. We can talk to her and work her through it if she wants, no problem. And if she's experienced, then she won't need our help, and she can go for it. Okay.
Just remember,
that's the second problem that I'm worried about is her experience. She's pretty young. The law firm that she represents has got a good reputation. I did some research on them, but she's, you know, looks to me like she just graduated out of law school 2 weeks ago.
Listen,
I think the insurance company is taking advantage of her and her inexperience.
Let's do this, Carl.
Dragging her feet.
Let's go through it in more detail. I'm going to take your name and number, call you off the air. We're going to go through it in more detail. We have pretty good relationships with most of the law firms out there. So we'll help you through it and get you an idea of what's going on. No charge to you. And then we'll see about her and see what we can do and go in more detail. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right, hold, and Kevin will take your name and number, and we'll call you this week. Thanks for listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to go to Don. Don, you have a question about insurance and liability?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you doing today, bud?
Takes repetition, so thanks for being there every Saturday morning. I get up for your show, and I hear it, and I hear it, and I finally, the MedPay, we filed for it. We got the check. Thanks to you guys.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
We weren't going to do that because a different agent told me that they would subrogate. I'd mentioned that before, so it did come through. We did get the check, so thank you both.
And they don't subrogate it. Don, don't let them subrogate it on you.
This is what I was suggested, and so I called you guys, and you said, no, it's your money. You paid for your coverage. It's your check, and I did get it, and so far as that, it's all good. We'll see if they try any funny business.
Good.
So my question this morning, I'd asked before we ran out of time on another show, I since have given my daughter a car. I signed the title. She's titled it like yesterday. It's her car. She needs her own insurance. If she gets in a wreck, I was told that there could be liability that come back on me and the property owner because she's a member of my household. If she didn't have enough coverage to take care of an incident that she's liable for, is that fact? Is that correct? Is there a potential that I could be sued still as the landowner household that she lives in? She's, you know, not fully emancipated. She just got a job. She lives here. Okay, so what are you, millennial situation, right?
Who's the car titled in?
It is now titled in her name. It used to be mine.
How old is your daughter?
22.
Okay. Your daughter's 22. She's living in your home, but the car's in her name. The insurance is in her name. There's very, very little chance that somebody's going to come back at your policy or at you. Now, what will happen at times, because she's in your household and because you have a policy also, what will happen at times is that people will try to get a hold of the coverage that your policy extends to say they are entitled to coverage also. But mainly, that's going to happen when your daughter or you get hurt and you're trying to get coverage from your own policy.
You know, Brad, there's a doctrine called the when someone lives in your household, your resident relative. I mean, to help you if you get in a car accident. I'm not sure help with liability if she gets an accident. But let's say she gets in a car accident. There's not enough insurance to cover her losses. Being a member of your household, a blood relative, she could probably then get, you know, tap into your insurance, maybe for MedPay or even uninsured motorist coverage. But I don't think it'd help you on the liability side I don't think they'd be able to come after your insurance if she was in an accident. It was her fault.
I was told by an agent we currently have insurance through that this could be the case, and it sounded bizarre to me. Wanted to hear from you guys on it.
No.
Get higher than the legal limit of insurance, so she's getting more like $300, $500 possibly, and $10,000 MedPay again, thanks to you guys.
Yeah, well, she should get as much as she can because it also helps on her underinsured motorist coverage and uninsured motorist coverage. But what she's talking about, or what the agent was talking about, is a thing known as the family car doctrine. Okay, and that's if it's a family car. Now, then they will walk through and ignore basically how it's titled. And that may be what the agent's talking about, is if it's a family car. But if this is her car, if it's in her name, if it's titled in her name, she's basically the exclusive driver. Now, that doesn't mean every now and then somebody else doesn't drive it, but it's not being used as a family car that anybody can drive. But you've got your car, your wife has her car, your daughter has her car, everybody's got their own cars. Basically, that's the car you drive. Then the insurance, if she hits somebody or causes an accident, they're not going to be able to come after you. You weren't negligent. It's not your car. You didn't negligently entrust it to her. You didn't negligently supervise her. They're not going to do anything. But on the other hand, because she's a resident relative, if you get in an accident and your injuries are so bad that they exceed your underinsured motorist coverage or your uninsured motorist coverage, then there's a chance you can add on her uninsured motorist coverage as a because she's a resident relative. So actually, it's more to your benefit than not. And you've done a great job of making sure it's titled in her name, and she manages it.
In other words, she has to live, but she'd have to live in your household.
Right.
She lives by herself in an apartment, has her own car insurance, probably no coverage. But, you know, if she was driving one of your cars, even though she has her own car, she would be covered under your insurance as a driver of one of your cars, unless you specifically exclude her as a driver.
If her car gets in a wreck, that's normal. It's my insurance that applies. But if it's her car, her wreck, or it's all her insurance and they're separate, is what I was thinking.
That's right.
I just hear a suggestion that might be some kind of overlap. Like, what?
No. You're right. You're on the right track. And there's a case called Hutchins versus Hafner in Colorado where the court will look to see that if your daughter is acting as your agent in fulfilling a purpose for which the car was intended, there could be your insurance involved, but it's rarely going to happen. You're pretty safe. You know, your daughter should still get good limits, but you're pretty safe. I wouldn't worry about it.
Excellent. Thanks so much, bunch guys. Appreciate it.
You bet, Don. Take care. Thanks for listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to take a break. We'll come back right back. We have some lines open. Melvin, we're going to get to you next. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. You and your life and what questions we can answer for you. But first, we're going to talk to Eric over at Caitlin's. Eric, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
Doing good. What's cooking over at Caitlin's?
Well, I got a couple Blue Plate specials to go over with you guys. Our breakfast Blue Plate special for the week is going to be our signature chicken enchiladas. Now, that comes with corn tortillas, two eggs cooked any style, griddled brown hash browns, our signature beans, also our signature red or green chili on top of that. We're going to melt some cheddar and jack cheese on top of that. That's only going to run for $8.50 for the week. Our lunch Blue Plate special is going to be the Bradley salad. Now, that's a bed of greens. Obviously, we're going to put diced smoked turkey on there, diced bacon, jack and cheddar cheese, tomatoes, cucumbers, bell peppers, carrots, guacamole, sunflower seeds. If that's not enough on there, I don't know what is. And it also comes with a side of multigrain toast, if you'd like that. That's going to be that Blue Plate lunch special for the week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's only from 11 to 2, but it's every Monday and Friday. It's only $8.45, and that actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. So come on down and check that out. We've got the umbrellas up for now. I don't know how that's going to hold out. Kind of waiting to see, but they are up right now, and the crafts for $12.50 are flowing. So you can come on down to Caitlin's. You can get a good start to your day. We'd love to have everybody down. Come on down and see us.
And it's just beautiful out there.
Absolutely. It's a perfect time right now.
I was thinking about that deck as I was driving into the radio station today, and I thought, man, I'd love to be over at Caitlin's right now.
Well, come on down and get some pancakes, get some red and green chili. We'll get you going.
Sounds good, Eric. Where are you located?
Okay, we're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Sounds good. We'll see you down there.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Eric.
You too.
You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to talk to Melvin. Melvin's been holding for quite a while. Melvin, thank you for holding. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call. Now I'm really hungry after hearing all that.
Hey, I've eaten down there. You got to go down there, man. It's really good.
Nonetheless, this is my situation. In November of 16, I bought a used vehicle, a used 16, very nice vehicle that had hail damage, but I have subsequently found out that it had been totaled. I bought it from a dealership, and I want to find out what recourse I have with these guys.
Did they give you a salvage title, or did they give you a regular title?
They did not give me a salvage title. In fact, the sales guy was very explicit with me, telling me that no claims had been filed against it and that it was clean, that somebody had just had the damage and traded it in for something else.
Did you get a Carfax?
That's where I got my information from, Carfax. It had been totaled by an insurance company. I did go up there this week. They have a very similar vehicle that, you know, I just want to be made whole on it. If, you know, if I could trade it back in for this vehicle, I'd be okay with it.
What when you say it was total, was it total due to the hail damage or was it total?
Hail damage, yes, sir.
Okay. Uh-huh. So the damage, the hail damage was of such significance that it was that they totaled the car.
That's what the Carfax told me, and I've done a little research. I guess if the value, if the damage is, what, three-quarters the value of the vehicle, that it will be totaled?
Yeah, usually they do that. And, of course, they didn't give you that much of a break on the purchase of the car, correct?
They did give me a heck of a price on it. It's one of those deals where it was almost too good to be true, and that's why I went for it. Because there was nothing wrong with my existing vehicle. I was just having a service that day and saw this and was like, wow, this is unbelievable.
Well, here's what's going to happen, Melvin. To be able to help you one way or the other, and I don't know if we'll be able to help you in time for this car, except you might want to go down and talk to the salesperson and the manager and see what happens. I don't know if they'll help you. But for us to help you, we're going to have to get a hold of your papers. We're going to have to see what papers you signed and get a hold and probably go to the dealership and ask them to send us your file, copy of your file, and look and see what is in the transaction documents. Because that's going to tell us a lot about disclosures. That's going to tell us a lot about as-is statements. That's going to tell us a lot about what they said with regard to the hail damage. In my opinion, sitting here right now, I believe when they showed you the hail damage and they were talking about the hail damage, they also should have told you the extent to which the hail damage was assessed and how much and what it did affected the car. Obviously, the Carfax now has got you in a situation where you're not going to be able to sell the car absent somebody researching it and saying, wait a minute, this is a total car, so they're not going to give you anything really of value for the car. You're going to be faced with a situation of trying to fix it, and you're not going to be able to fix it, really. And I think that should have been something that was disclosed. But I would really like to see the paperwork.
They should have probably given you a salvage title. If the car actually was salvaged, did it say that the Carfax of the vehicle had been salvaged?
Yeah, that didn't happen. I just found out this week, actually, through Carfax.
Yeah.
And the shame of it is this is the third vehicle I have bought from this dealership. I know the owner personally, and I just feel that I've been taken, and it's just not right.
I'm thinking you were. The dealerships, the owners, a lot of times they don't know what their managers and their salespersons are doing. Sometimes they do. I'm not going to give an owner a bad name or a good name as a result of what happens in something like this. But it's important, I think, that we take a look at the paperwork. But it might be good if you know the owner, give him a call and say, hey, you know, this was a total car, and you know, I'm trying to figure out. See, I think what was done is everything was done behind the scenes. They totaled this through whoever their adjusters were to get money from their insurance company and didn't salvage it. And I've got a question on why it wasn't salvaged once it was a totaled car. And then selling it to you without disclosure of that, I think they failed to give you appropriate disclosures. So that's why I'd like to see the paperwork to make sure they didn't sneak something on the paperwork that would sink your ship in the ability to be able to do something about this. But my beginning belief is wait a minute, this dealership didn't do you right, and you should go down there and talk to the manager or the owner, and for sure talk to the owner and say, what I really want to do is just trade it in, get a different car, and move on.
I'm scheduled to go down there today, but what you just said, would that be considered washing the title?
Yeah. I've got some concerns about what they did. That's exactly how, you know, once the car is totaled, that puts it into a different classification. And I think that, you know, at this point or at that point, they it should be a salvage value title. I don't think it's anything different. I don't know why they didn't do it. You know, I'm kind of stumped on this one, because normally once it's totaled, and if the insurance company or that they use totaled the vehicle, they should have it should be designated as that. Now, you know, they may look and say you had a chance to get a Carfax before you bought it, you didn't take advantage of that. But I think they have a duty to disclose that, because I'm willing to bet the dealership got the money. See, this sounds like it was probably a car that was on the dealer's lot at the time, was beat up in the hailstorm at that point, and the dealership got the money. Even if we give them the benefit of the doubt and say somebody brought it in and traded it in, they would still know about it being totaled. And at that point, a car has a different, it takes on a different nature. So,
how many miles does this car did it have on when you bought it?
10 and some change.
Oh, yeah, it was on their lot. Yeah, so, yeah, I think you ought to go down there and talk to him. I wouldn't start with any kind allegations or accusations against him. I'd just go down and say, if you have the same salesperson or if you want to talk to the manager, it's going to have to go to a manager or the owner, or call the owner and say, hey, I got a problem here. Here's what happened. What I want to do, here's how I'd like to work it out, and see what they'll do for you. You ought to be able to get it done. But in the meantime, let me get your name and number off the air, and we'll help you through it, all right?
All right, I appreciate it, and would like to wish everyone a happy Memorial Day. I'm a veteran, and would just like to wish everyone who served a happy Memorial Day.
Well, thank you for serving our country, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll try and help you, all right?
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to stay right with the phones and take your calls in the order in which they came. We're going to talk to JD now. You have a question about limitations with business days, JD?
Yes. Thank you for taking the call, and I really appreciate your show. I like to listen to it just for the law facts, and you guys are up front and you tell the client ahead of time, and I really like the way you operate your business. My question is, you know, since when you the first caller mentioned, you said there would be a year of a statute of limitations or time to file or what have you, but there's 96 days out of a year, or just on weekends, where nobody's in the courthouse excluding the holidays. And why is it that, you know, when they say a year, it's just a flat year?
You know, JD, I want to talk to you about it here in a minute, but unfortunately, we got to go to break because we're right at the quarter hour. Can you hold over and for a few minutes?
I'd be glad to.
Thank you. We'll be right back. You listen to Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. We have JD on the line, and after that, we're going to talk to Walter. We'll be right back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in the studio. We're talking to JD right now about questions about limitation with businesses. JD, you ask a good question, and let's talk about it. The legislature, the Colorado legislature, sets the statute of limitations. That's by statute. And we then, as lawyers and in the legal world, have to figure out how to compute that time. There's a rule, Colorado Rule of Civil Procedure 6, that talks about how do you compute and extend time for different documents. And it provides that when you're computing time, the following rules apply, and it will tell you that it applies to any statute, it applies to any rule, it applies to any order that's given by a court. And if the period is stated in days or a longer unit, like days, months, years, whatever, then you do not count the day of the event, but you count every day after that, including Saturdays, Sundays, and legal holidays. And if the last day falls on a Saturday, Sunday, or legal holiday, then you go to the next business day or you go to when that legal holiday, Saturday, Sunday ends, so you're going to the next business day for your deadline. So it's just an arbitrary way of counting the days that's been set out by our legal system that we have to follow.
Okay, I understand that. But I would also like to make a quick shout out for Fort Logan and the groundskeepers and management up there are taking care of all the veterans who have passed, and wish them all a happy Memorial Day and thank them for that, their service, and thank you for your service that you do for the law and upholding the law and not misrepresenting it. And I really appreciate you guys quite a bit. And it's just what hurts is what I see a lot of due process lately just being thrown out the window, and it just hurts, you know. And I see a lot of people are being victimized by that lately, and it's just, I know that you guys don't operate that way, but I sure hope that people can start, you know, looking out for each other a little bit better.
Well, I want to tell you, JD, you made a great statement. I have both a mother and a father buried out at Fort Logan, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful grounds out there. They take care of that place like you wouldn't believe, and when you go out there and visit, I'm always, always very impressed with the way they take care of that cemetery, and it's fantastic. And thank you for your compliments to our show. We do it as a service, and we hope that it helps people. I got to tell you, JD, there are some mornings on Saturday mornings I'm dragging my rear end in here, going, "Oh my gosh!" But once this show starts, I'm so happy I've done it. So I just want to let you know we appreciate doing it. We appreciate our listeners. So
okay, thank you
have a good Memorial Day.
You guys are awesome. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, JD. We appreciate it. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I want to give a shout out to Barry and Larry, their real estate show. You want to listen to these guys. They are fantastic. They know their stuff. They're consumer advocates. They take care of you. They do it for you. They want to make sure that you know the real estate ins and outs, and they are very knowledgeable. These guys are on top of it. So listen to Barry and Larry, and then if you want to do anything around your house, don't start without listening to Ken Moon later on. You've got to listen to him, too. He comes on for another 2 hours, and then there's Barry and Larry again. So you really want to listen to those folks. Listen to the rest of this lineup on this station. It's very good. We've got Walter. Walter, you have a question about subcontractor versus employee.
Yes. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I responded to an ad on Craigslist, and I went over to the contractor. It was a general contractor here locally, and they employed me. We agreed on a certain hourly rate. I worked majority of a week. We got to the end of the week, and they shorted me about 25% of my pay. So their question was that I was a subcontractor, and they didn't like either the work or whatever it was. That wasn't it. It was quality work. But the question became, was it employment at will, and I was covered employment, or was I a subcontractor? So I looked it up. I went there every day between 8 and 5. They agreed on a price. Price per hour. We didn't have a contract. I didn't have a total price. I used their equipment. They were on the job and supervised the job. But so I get to the end, and they write a partial check for about 75% of the wages and put it on at final payment. So I went ahead and I cashed the check, and then I went back and I said, well, you know, I think I have rights to lien the job. And they said, well, no, you don't, because you were a subcontractor.
Well, I'm having some problems all the way around on this one. I don't think you were treated fairly at all. First of all, I don't think you were a subcontractor. Let me ask you, when you said you worked there 8 to 5, did they give you those hours? They wanted you there 8 and you weren't supposed
Absolutely.
To leave till 5?
I was told to arrive at 8 and I would work till 5.
No, there's the first problem. Then they told you what days to be there, right? So they told you what days.
Yes, I started on that first day, and I worked to the end of the week.
They supervised you and oversaw how you did your job to make sure it fit within their standards and qualifications.
Well, there was some issues with communication. I will have to admit that. And even the customer of the property was kind of like, where's this going? I mean, you know, they were trying to do too many projects. They're painting a ceiling and working on a floor while I'm trying to set cabinets.
Okay.
In the same area. But anyway, that's kind of the scope of the work.
Well yeah, but that's the scope of the work. But the point of it is that, you know, when they start governing your time and your hours, when you're using their materials and their tools and using their equipment, when they are watching over you, like you're saying, and you're not really independent, but they're watching over you how you do your job, you become, at that point, an employee. You're not a subcontractor.
Right.
And
right.
At that point, they've got to pay you. And I'm not even so sure the reason they say they didn't pay you is appropriate anyway. They've got a duty to pay you the amount they have to pay you. And so I don't think that they can take. I'm not even certain why they're taking the 25% off. Are they saying you didn't do your job correctly?
No, as a customer at the property, they love the work I did. So that wasn't the issue. So basically, I got to the fifth day, and it was noon, and they just said, hey, we're going to release you now. Well, they wrote on the check, the contractor wrote on the check, this amount, here it was. It wasn't my hours at the rate of how many hours I had at the rate I was working at. So it was about 25% less. But then they wrote final payment on it. So I figured, well, I better go cash the check now. And so do I have rights to file a 10-day notice and send them a request for payment?
I think you can send, you can file the 10-day notice, and I think what's going to happen is they're going to ignore it. The owner might get involved at that point. So that's why you want to file it. You might be able to lien it, but normally on a mechanics lien is what you're talking about. Actually, employees or subcontractors can do it. Either one, laborers can do it. But what's going to happen is they're probably going to ignore it and say you're not going to foreclose on the property for that small of a claim. I'm a little worried about the check you signed and cash because if it says final payment, but I think you can do that under protest. I want to talk to you off the air about that, but I think you've taken a small claims court too. I don't see a reason why you don't go after them. You know, these guys owe you the money. Everything you've told me about what happened here tells me that you will classify as an employee. And so I think they failed to pay you as an employee. Bob, what do you think?
Well, Brad, there's a 9-point test that's available, in workers' comp and also on the labor side, determine whether or not you're an employee or an independent contractor. And you bet if you got hurt on the job, they'd say you're an employee, that you're an independent contractor.
Right.
You know, they're playing both sides at the same time. You know, when they don't want you to be an employee at one point, but you know they would want, you know, just the opposite. If you got hurt on the job, they'd say you're an independent contractor.
Hey, Walter, there's our music. We got to get it going. Can we call you off the air and talk to you about this?
Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold. Kevin's going to get your name and number, and we'll give you a call. All right, buddy?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We're here every Saturday to talk to you about your legal problems. It's our pleasure to do it. All of you have a good, safe Memorial Day holiday. Don't drive drunk, folks. Please don't drive and drink. Stop that madness out there. And that way, we'll all get to talk to you next week, and you can listen to the Bell and Polk Show next week. We'll see you then.
See you later.